In the book of Acts, we find Paul leaving the Jerusalem Council, which is the meeting in the book of Acts. So much hinges upon this time when all of the leaders came together. It was one of the first committee meetings of the early church. And as we read through the minutes of that meeting, we see that Paul was questioned because he questioned the practice of circumcision, whether Gentiles who became followers of Jesus had to follow that old tradition of the faith. Well, they came together and it was hotly debated, people on both sides. There were those who said, of course this is necessary. It's part of God's covenant with the people. It's part of the law of Moses. It has always been required. But then there were others like Paul who argued it's not necessary, that we already see evidence of the Spirit of God in Gentiles, which was anybody who was not Jewish. Well, after meeting and debating and talking, they came to the place where they decided this practice should not be a burden on Gentiles. And they wrote a letter that was sent out throughout the region. And then Paul was sent out to go and spread this same message. That they came to this conclusion in part because they looked back on stories like Abraham and Sarah, who were called by God and followed as an act of faith before this practice was necessary. So faith does not require circumcision, that faith should only focus on the essentials. That when God called Abraham and Sarah, God said, I will be your God and you will be my people, and widened the circle. That through you, I will bless all nations, which of course would include Gentiles. The early church could have also looked back to that well-known prayer of Jesus at the end of his life in the Gospel of John, where Jesus prays for the oneness of the church, praying not only for those who believed then, the Jewish followers of Jesus, but also anticipating the circle widening, those who would come to believe through them, which of course would involve Gentiles. So here is Paul working for the oneness of the church for all nations, Jew and Gentile alike. Well, then he leaves this committee meeting. And he goes out to Philippi, where he meets Lydia, a Gentile, and she and her entire household are baptized. But then he meets another woman, whose name we do not know. And she is a slave, working on behalf of her owners as a fortune teller. She has what they deem a spirit of divination. She's a fortune teller, selling religion to others. Well, she starts following Paul and Silas around, yelling for anyone to hear, these men worship the Most High God, and they bring to you a way of salvation. Well, Paul didn't have a problem with what she said, but how she said it. She was doing what she had always done, selling religion to others. But Paul knew you cannot sell a message of love and grace and justice. It cannot be marketed. It can only be lived. So he calls the spirit out of her, costing her owners a source of income. So they go to the authorities, claiming that Paul and Silas are calling others to worship the Most High God, which was a problem for the Roman authorities because Romans were supposed to provide religious sacrifices to Caesar. So Paul and Silas are thrown into jail. But these owners of the slave were not angry about corrupting religion. They were angry about economics. But they kept that reason hidden. When we went to Montgomery to visit the National Memorial for Peace and Justice, which is the memorial for those who have been lynched throughout this country, we walked around looking at the different counties and the names listed underneath them from throughout the country, paying particular attention to those counties in which we had lived. We also came across one that had more names than most. So we looked up the date in the county, and we read about the race riots in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1921, that apparently an African-American was accused of a crime. And in an effort, in the court of public opinion, to defend his innocence, there was this altercation just out there on the street where two black men and eight white men were killed. And out of this altercation, these race riots emerged. But the riots were not just about this one altercation, that this one incident unleashed a hidden prejudice and anger that was beneath the surface. That Tulsa had one of the wealthiest black communities in the country, and mobs of white individuals went down to the businesses in the black community to loot them and destroy them, putting 800 people in the hospital and killing an unknown amount of people. Now, Paul and Silas were arrested for corrupting religion. But perhaps the hidden reason is always the most dangerous. And then sitting there in prison that night, bound by the walls of the jail, they were found singing and praying, almost foreshadowing the tradition of slaves, singing the spiritual, "Go down, Moses, way down in Egypt land. Tell, O Pharaoh, let my people go." And then there was an earthquake that shook the ground beneath the jail, and the gates swung open. Well, of course, the jailer was terrified. He knew what his punishment would be if all the prisoners were found free. So out of his fear, he contemplated harming himself. But Paul and Silas had no hidden agenda. They were more interested in the common good. They were less concerned about an escape and more concerned with liberation, which is always freedom for everyone. So they called out, "We are still here," preventing the jailer from hurting himself. And then the jailer, like Lydia, that he is an entire household, were baptized. Now, how do we take a story such as this and translate it into our lives? We could speak about the big issues of today, modern day slavery or oppression found around the world. We could stand up and speak out, which is good and important and essential, but we would still be speaking from a distance. How do we translate it into our everyday lives? During my last semester in seminary, It was very hard to focus on school. Like every senior year, it's hard to sit down and write that last paper that's due on the last day of classes. There were all these conversations swirling around all of us, people interviewing with churches or talking to others about ministry positions, and of course, discussing ordination. Well, for all of my friends that were Presbyterian, Methodist, Lutheran, Episcopalian, that was a much more complicated process. Lined out in a lockstep, do this, and then that, and then this, meeting with denominational bodies, studying for comprehensive ordination exams, even taking required personality tests. But for us Baptists, we were just meeting with some committee at some church. And for many of us, myself included, it was the place where I grew up. So in April of that year, I drove to the First Baptist Church of Augusta, Georgia, to meet with an ordination council of 9 people. We were only going to meet once. And they were the group who were supposed to ask me the hard-hitting questions of faith and ministry. But most of them had known me my entire life. I had entered the cradle rolls of that church, and it's rather hard for your third-grade Sunday school teacher to ask you the hard-hitting questions. So we sat in this room in a circle. And they went around, most of them offering wonderful affirmation because they were just so excited that a child of the church was going into the ministry. And many of them asked about my personal sense of calling, my story that had brought me to that moment, what seminary was like, what I was looking forward to in ministry. But there was one question I will never forget. It was the best question of the afternoon that Dan Smith, God rest his soul, was sitting to my immediate left. And when it was his turn, he said, "Tell me, is there any prejudice that you might have that could get in the way of the gospel of Jesus Christ?" I knew the correct answer to that question, and I felt like I could give the correct answer. I believed everyone is created equal, that each and every person is a child of God. But I paused. I hesitated. Perhaps it was the tone of his voice or the weight of that moment or the fact that his question laid out prejudice alongside the gospel of Jesus Christ, which goes as wide as we can imagine and embraces the entire world, that I paused. And I thought about that question for what seemed like 20 minutes, even though it was 20 seconds. Because there is a different level to that question, something deeper. That do you have any prejudice, any bias, any preference? Do you gravitate towards a particular type of person or personality? Or are there those that grate against your personality that's more difficult for you to practice patience with? Or is there any assumption based on culture, tradition, race, disability, education, poverty, anything that could be just below the surface that could run up against the gospel of Jesus Christ. I finally turned to Dan, and I took a breath, and I said, "Yes, I probably do." That growing up, we probably just absorb some of those things because they're always around us. But maybe the most dangerous thing is to assume that they are not there. That if we can acknowledge them, we have a better chance of living beyond them. Dan listened to my answer for what seemed like 20 minutes. He finally turned to me and said, "I think that'll do." That Paul and Silas could have escaped, thinking only of themselves. But they were interested in more, in liberation, in freedom for all. Jew and Gentile alike, all nations, Lydia and the jailer. That it is learning that the best decision for me, it's not always the best decision for all. And that, my friends, is truly liberating. When the grace of God frees us up enough to make the best decision for all, even when it is not the best decision for me. Amen.